This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The Economic Roundtable is in session. Busisiwe Mavuso, good morning to you. Welcome to Power Week.
Good morning, Mori, and thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure to have you. Dr. Morris Mtombeni, welcome to Power Week. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Maria. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Prof. Chris Maligane, Associate Professor of Economics at WITS. Good morning. Welcome to you.
Good morning, Maria. Good morning to the listeners and to the fellow panelists.
Professor Chris, I don't want us to focus on COVID-19 in isolation. Maybe I want us to look at, maybe give some kind of a perspective and also look at, punctuate some historical milestones pertaining to the economy. For instance, one. After the multi-party talks and the democratic elections, it became clear, the first democratic elections, it became clear that the National Party government went losing power. They lost power, not only power, but they gave the ANC-led government a bankrupt economy. That is the fact, isn't it? That's very much important. So as part of a trajectory moving forward, what were the right things that the ANC-led government did at the time, because they had to approach the IMF, something that we all shudder at this point in time. But what did the ANC government did at the time to take us out of that economic mess so that we moved that trajectory under Mandela, under Thabo Mbeki, until we started experiencing problems? If you can just give us a context there, what the right things that we did economically?
I think what the first thing that the ANC did was to develop the Reconstruction and Development Program, which was a program that was broadly agreed by the social partners in the country. And it used that program as an electoral program to get to government. However, then what happened was that around 1996, there was a capital flight. The rand crashed, and the ANC basically abandoned that progressive program, which I think had they implemented, it could have taken the country to greater heights. But they then abandoned it and adopted the growth, employment and redistribution, which called for fiscal austerity, cut back on government debt, and reduced investment in public social infrastructure and so forth. Right? Mm-hmm. I think where that program, that's where we started deviating, and we lost a major opportunity. I mean, the correct thing that the ANC did was to come up with a reconstruction and development program. But then, soon after that, then through pressure from international investors, then they shifted towards the growth, employment, and redistribution. And ever since then, there have been really mild progress that has been made in terms of addressing socio-economic historic inequalities in this country.
Okay. Dr. Morris Mtombeni, can we move to other important point back in 2008 where we experienced the global crisis? And I know commentators, you know, here in the country, they mentioned the fact that South Africa was cushioned on the basis that we were busy preparing for the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Is that really the only thing that cushioned us? Or were there other important things that South African government did to mitigate that 2008 global crisis?
Thank you, Maria. In 2008, we had other dimensions that were working in our favor. From a South African banking perspective, the banking regulator under the leadership of the South African Reserve Bank, and obviously the very conservative treasury that we operated under at that time, really had created an environment where our banks were well capitalized, which means that whilst many of the banking systems in many parts of the world were very fragile, our banking system was relatively strong. So remember that the global crisis in 2008 was first and foremost a banking crisis before it became an economic crisis. So we must recognize that our context was slightly different. However, over and above that, we had the benefit, the endowment of a low GDP, debt-to-GDP ratio at that stage, and therefore our war chest, so to speak, our capacity to withstand the unexpected, that black swan, was a lot stronger from a balance sheet perspective, a country balance sheet perspective. And therefore, when you take those two factors into consideration, coupled with, at that stage, a credible leadership, we had both in government, a credible leadership in business, and a credible leadership in society, with a social compact, when we're able to navigate some of those difficult challenges that were facing us. So it's not so much what government can do in times of crisis, but what different stakeholders in society can do, and also a function of the resource endowment available to the different stakeholders in society. So 2008 was difficult, but nothing like what we're facing today. Today we're faced with a wide variety of negative indicators, and we have to navigate ourselves through this difficult situation with negative endowments as opposed to those positive endowments I spoke about just now.
Okay. You know, Busisiwe, to segue into Dr. Mthombeni's point about the importance of leadership, and not just leadership in isolation, but this consultative stakeholder process that is important in terms of pushing back against any kind of a crisis. Looking at the status quo, globally, we are confronted by COVID-19. South Africa, the president has done something in terms of invoking the Disaster Management Act and declaring that the country be under lockdown for 21 days. As business leadership South Africa, from a leadership perspective in terms of combating or pushing back against COVID-19, do you think, particularly from a corporate sector point of view, the captains of industry have played their role adequately in this fight against the COVID-19?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mario. Look, I think both my colleagues are raising very important points. I think the context that Dr. Chris Malikane gave and Professor Mthombeni after him, both of those are characterized by decisive and strong leadership, right? We might not have made the right decisions at the time, but we made decisions nevertheless. And I think that is important. And that is a pure function of leadership. So we find ourselves at a time where we are going to be severely hit by all the multiple shocks that are actually going to hit us from an economic point of view and from any other angle, precisely because, and those shocks are going to be severe because it found South Africa in at its most weakest point. So as business, we have not done what we're supposed to do. As government, we have not done what we're supposed to do. So whatever interventions that were put in place at the moment, it might be a little, too late, because we knew what we were supposed to do, I think, to try and ensure that, for instance, from a government perspective, the lost decade, is dealt with. There were clear policy directives that were supposed to have implemented. Business, on the other hand, for the past 25 years, have not done what they are supposed to do. We have actually, looked at the triple B policy and the broader transformation policy, from a very minimalist perspective. So this coronavirus finds us, with an economic structure that is actually very skewed. So it therefore exposes how inadequate, the structure of our society is. It exposes how inadequate the interventions that we've put into place are. If we're going to tell people that you need to social distance, you need to wash your hands very often, and so forth, you therefore have to first answer the question that, do those people have running water? Do those people, have a big enough yard, you know, to be able to social distance. If you have people living on top of each other, you can't call for social distancing. It is just not possible. You know, if you have people, or if you're sitting in an economy that is actually sitting at 30% unemployment, you know, it makes it difficult for people to can withstand the lockdown that has currently been implemented. So it's going to make a bad situation worse. You know, so from a leadership perspective, I would have say that as a country, we have failed to do what we're supposed to do. And now we are pushing a corner and we have to make decisions. But unfortunately, you know, we whatever decisions that we make, you know, it is not going to allow us as an economy to actually escape unscathed. You know, so we are not also going to be able to soften the blows that are actually going to come, you know, with the severity of both the COVID-19 and the ratings downgrade and everything else that is actually going to descend upon the South African economy as things stand.
We tell us as it is here on Power 98.7, Power Week it is with me, Murio Sanyani, the voice of Busisiwe Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa. Professor Chris Maligani, let's just move into some of the points that she has raised pertaining to spectacular failures, you know, coming to the leadership, both in government and business. But here is a million-dollar question. South Africa has been trying so much to avoid the IMF. But last week, Sunday, Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, had a teleconference with selective journalists, and where there was an indication that he might approach the IMF. But here is a catch. He says, should we battle to contain COVID-19? So meaning that it's not just on a broad basis, but on a COVID-19 specifics. What is your view in terms of that? The fact that we're even considering approaching the IMF after all these efforts that have been made that we shouldn't go that particular route. Yep.
I think the Minister of Finance is jumping the gun. There are many things that we could do as a country before we reach that conclusion. So I think that a lot of regulatory changes can be effected, and a lot of resources can still be mobilized domestically before we can reach that stage, because you must remember that taking funds from institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank, it has a bad record, particularly for developing countries and emerging markets. So there's not even a single developing country that is a shining example for having taken over IMF and World Bank loans. I mean, if you look at the African continent, for example, you have a continent littered with highly indebted poor countries, which received the loans from the IMF and the World Bank. They were asked after that to say, if we want to pay back these loans, we must implement structural adjustment programs. And those structural adjustment programs did not deliver to the people. In fact, it worsened the situation and created massive dislocation inside the continent and a lot of in-migration and out-migration from the continent. So we need to be very careful and learn from history, the history of other countries, before we jump to those conclusions. South Africa has got massive resources that have to be unlocked to strengthen social transformation, as fellow panelist Buso was saying. All that we need is proper leadership, a leadership that has a correct ideology, and a leadership that is able to learn from history, its own history of the country and the history of the continent and the world. So I would really discourage any thought that we need to go to the IMF before we could exhaust all our internal resources as a country.
Dr. Morris Mthombeni, you could hear from Professor Maligani's point of view that IMF, you know, we should really, really distance ourselves, maybe keep a social distancing from the IMF. But how does, you know, when South Africa joined the BRICS, you know, there was this celebration, there was this air of optimism to say we are going to break away. You know, probably we are creating some kind of an alternative because we don't want to be indebted to things like the IMF and whatever. And the fact that BRICS itself, you know, went on to to create a new development bank, or what we call, you know, the BRICS Bank. I think the last time we heard so much about BRICS Bank was when we're told that former Minister of Finance Nene was being redeployed from being a minister to go and head the BRICS Bank or something. But why is Minister Mboweni, Dr. Mthombeni, considering the IMF without even hearing anything about the BRICS Bank? Are they not relevant people to consider here? Or the results are going to be the same, whether you go to BRICS Bank or whether you go to IMF?
Mori, you ask very difficult questions, but I suppose that's what you're paid to do. Look, I have a slightly different view to the one that Chris is advancing. I think if you were to take this down to a human level as opposed to a country level, we then start having very slightly different conversations. When you are in financial distress and you need help from your friends and family and you get a loan or from a bank, that loan is not given to you without conditions. And it's given to you because not only is it expected that you have an ability to repay the loan, but you also have a willingness to repay the loan. The difficulty at a country level when we're looking at these multilateral institutions like IMF and World Bank is that, in my view, my hypothesis is the reason why many of the countries don't have a positive experience of the World Bank and IMF on the continent is not because they didn't have an ability to repay the loans, but because they didn't have a willingness to repay the loans. They didn't have the willingness to accept the conditions under which those loans were given. Now, if you look at our most recent downgrades, either from Moody's or Fitch, these should not come as a surprise to us. We were given sufficient warning about the medicine we needed to take, and we just did not want to take that medicine. And so, once again, for me, I think we are way past being philosophical about what we need to do to save our country. We need to shift to facing the reality that millions of people are going to be destitute much more than they were prior to the onset of the coronavirus crisis. And therefore, whatever historical arguments we had about who can help us need to be set aside. And we need to really reflect on what we are willing to do to get our country back on track. Whether it is going to the IMF, World Bank, or the BRICS Bank, I don't think a lender, whether it's a Chinese lender or BRICS lender or an American lender, will behave any differently. Principles of lending are the same all over the world. You want to make sure when you give your money out, you can get it back from the people that you're lending the money to. So in short, I believe we actually need to move beyond historically, divisive views of how we see multinational institutions to start saying, what responsibility do we take ourselves for the situation in which you find ourselves?
Well, I think it's a bit of a tie. I think we'll come back to it because I know it's a bit of an interesting dynamic. We seem to be having a tie. I want to talk about the ethical leadership. I wonder, especially because I'm currently reading a book that was written in 2011 by Dr. Ruel Khoza, you know, called Attuned Leadership, talking about humaneness, talking about the issues of ethics within business. You know, so but before we go there, I just want to find out from you in terms of the issue that we have a division on. Professor Chris Maligane has a different view from Dr. Mthombeni's. What is your view pertaining to World Bank versus the IMF, and whether is there any difference at all?
You know, I think I'm with Dr. Mthombeni on this one. I think We have actually made our bed. Now we're going to have to lie in it. You know, I think there's things that we could have done as a country, you know, in the past 3 years to actually turn the economic trajectory of this country around. There were structural reforms that were spoken about over and over again. You know, CR came into this leadership and actually had confidence, you know, at its highest, not because things were going right in the country, but because, you know, the country and the world decided to bet on him and his administration as a leader. So we have scored on goals on this one. We have failed to make the necessary decisions. Now we find ourselves where, unfortunately, we have kicked the can down the road, you know, so much that we have run out of time to continue to kick the can down the road. We are left with very little options in terms of how do we actually maneuver out of this crisis that we find ourselves in. And even if we wanted to maneuver, you'd agree with me that from a fiscal perspective, we've got very little room to maneuver, you know, and the monetary policy alone is not actually going to solve our problems, you know. So we are therefore going to have to, you know, go begging, you know, cap in hand. And unfortunately, because we are at our weakest as a country, we are not going to be having whatever negotiations, you know, from getting the loans on an equal foot. It's not going to be a negotiation of equals. Yeah. You know, we are therefore going to have, we are going to find ourselves being forced into a corner and accept whatever it is that we're actually going to be given. And unfortunately, as a country, we're just going to have to take it and ensure that we actually, you know, keep to those agreements.
Yeah.
So we have actually given our economic sovereignty, you know, on a silver platter, you know, to whoever, you know, we are actually going to, we have just given it up, you know.
Yeah.
So we now, therefore, I don't think that we have much room to maneuver when it comes to that.
Okay.
So I don't think the IMF is a bad idea, actually.
All right. To close it now, Professor Chris Maligani, the horse has long bolted, and according to Busisiwe Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, whether we approach the BRICS Bank, whether we approach the IMF, we as South Africa will be negotiating from a position of weakness because we stuffed up.
But you see, this stuffing up, I have a problem if you reduce it to the past 3 years or to the past 10 years. This stuffing up stretches back to the past 25 years. Because if you look at the fragility of the South African economy and the deep inequalities and lack of social transformation, it's not a matter of the past 10 years or the past 3 years. It's the past 25 years. So we need to begin to look back and ask ourselves questions. Where have we stepped up? You see, coming to this issue of the IMF and the World Bank, I've argued that South Africa has got resources, has got some industrial capacity domestically to respond to the crisis, the COVID crisis in particular. You know, there is no need yet to rush to the IMF before we can mobilize the domestic resources. Countries that rush to the IMF and the World Bank are countries that do not have sufficient industrial capacity to respond to the crisis. And the capacity of the country has not yet been explored, you know. So if you have a country, let's say a less developed country, that cannot manufacture masks, it has to import those masks. Obviously, that country will need dollars to pay for those masks. But there are South African companies that can manufacture those masks. We can use our own domestic currency to finance that because it's South African production process. So I'm saying here, we need to step back and think critically and strategically. We should think long term. We should not panic. We should think not emotionally. We should think in strategic terms, take decisions now that are not going to overburden future generations.
Okay.
So, that's my view.
All right. You know, in business schools, Dr. Maurice Mthombeni, they talk of strategic reflections. So,
yes.
I think that's what the Professor Chris Maligani is saying, that don't panic, strategic reflections. But here's a a WhatsApp I got from, this is my former teacher, by the way, Stiga Matiba. He's saying, "Hi, Murio, I can't understand why South Africa cannot produce its own face masks. After all, we have lots of clothing industries in the Western Cape. Reopen Babelegi in Hammerskraal, Zone 15 in Garankuwa. Why unions can't push for that? Faster sleep and ball watching. Said Mebra, Mzansi is happy to serve the world as consumers." Dr. Mthombeni, why don't we marshal? Isn't this an opportunity? Why do we have to battle and say, let's import? Or do we admit that we really decimated our clothing or manufacturing industry in this country where we can't even produce our own face masks and protective clothing in general? Yeah,
like I said earlier, you really should come and work at Gibbs Maria because you really ask these questions.
Well, I was a student there, maybe that's
why. I always enjoy our alumni because I know they give us back our own medicine. So in reality, I think it's a valid question. It's a fair question, but unfortunately, it's quite a technical issue. And technically, there's issues of face masks and all the other medical equipment that you require to really help us fight this COVID. It's actually called the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Are very technical, and we don't immediately have all the technology in terms of the plans and the equipment to actually manufacture all of these issues ourselves. However, what I'm looking forward to, and I was reading in the media that progress is being made, for example, with manufacturing of ventilators using old technology, and that those ventilators being manufactured here in South Africa. I see an opportunity, a shining light, a light at the end of the tunnel here, where technologies that were historically held back by the developed North will become available to the developing South countries like ourselves, where we will be able to manufacture. So it's not that we don't have the capacity and the ability. We don't have the technology. And this disease, this pandemic will open up opportunities for us to transfer those technologies to us so that we can use them. And I really do not want to create the impression that South Africa doesn't have the capacity. Where I want to agree with Chris is we have so many resource endowments in this country, and we have ability to respond, and we can use them. Where I want to slightly maybe place a slightly different emphasis is an issue of timing and an issue of liquidity. We may not always have the right technology and the right amount of liquidity to unlock the potential that is embedded in our natural resources, in our human resources. And therefore, that's why we must always be mindful that we need partners. We need global partners. We need local partners to work together to unlock this potential that Chris is referring to.
Okay, it's gone 23 minutes before the hour 11 o'clock. If you want to get in touch with my special guests on the line, I've got Professor Chris Maligani, Associate Professor of Economics at VETS, Dr. Maurice Mthombeni, Gibbs School of Business, as well as Busisiwe Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership in South Africa. Feel free to get in touch with us on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet us at PowerFM987, hashtag PowerWeek, or tweet me directly at Murio Muriano. Busisiwe, if we look at some of the frustrations that small business associations are communicating lately is the fact that, firstly, they are being marginalized in this process. They raise questions that when the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, President Cyril Ramaphosa, started the process of consultation, he consulted different stakeholders, including big business, but the SMMEs, they were not consulted at all. And whatever it's the problems that are being experienced, for instance, in the disbursement of relief funds and stuff like that, they point to the fact that why were they not consulted? From Business Leadership South Africa's perspective, when coming to proper consultation, will you support the cause of the associations of small businesses, that the fact that they were not consulted, maybe that's why all these plans are not really effectively executed within the ground?
So So I think from a consultation perspective, I'm going to have to probably maybe disagree, you know, and say that if you agree that NEDLAC is where all the social partners are being consulted and where the discussion of all partners happens, then I would say that we actually had or and continue to have NEDLAC discussions around, you know, this COVID-19 crisis and how all of us as the different social partners are actually going to ensure, you know, that we play a role and how we think things should actually be looked at and be done. So immediately after the first announcement the president made, I think on the 15th of March, which was a Sunday, the very following day, you know, there was an urgent NEDLAC meeting, you know, and business was represented as BUSA. BUSA, remember, is Business Unity South Africa. So it was not only Business Unity South Africa, it was also the BBC, you know, because remember, Black Business at some point in 2011, you know, left BUSA and were no longer part of that APEC structure. So BBC was there, but under BUSA, all of us as business associations are there. You know, you find BLSA, you find Minerals Council, you find Agri-SA, you find SBI, you know, which represents SMMEs, you find SACI, which represents SMMEs, and so forth and so forth. So if we, therefore, as leaders of these associations, don't, you know, play a meaningful, proactive role in terms of ensuring that whatever compact that is come up with, you know, fairly represents our constituency, I don't think that we can, therefore, make that the government's fault. You know, I think the problem is that this thing in its very nature, Morio, it's actually very complex. So it's going to be very difficult to try and ensure that you meet all the different stakeholders' needs, you know, to their satisfaction, you know, as it were, within this business as well. You know, you will find liquor companies and cigarette companies saying that, but, you know, we are essential services. You know, why are we not listed on the essential services, and why are we not, you know, why are we subjected to the lockdown and so forth and so forth? But I guess this is where the government is therefore going to have to say, I'm trying to put the 59 million South Africans first and foremost. You know, this is about South Africa Inc., you know, and how do I best, therefore, you know, ensure that I implement on that and ensure that when we come out of this, we actually have protected as many lives as possible. And I think the president is really clear that that is his first and foremost, you know, goal, you know. But I guess to the point that Dr. Mthombeni was actually making earlier on, I think this probably maybe gives us a silver lining, you know, because with every crisis, you probably have to look at what can be, you know, the opportunity that comes out of that crisis. And the opportunity that I see is that of ramping up domestic production, you know, because it's not like we don't have the resources. But again, Morio, it takes me back to our failure from a policy perspective. South Africa has failed to be protectionist in terms of how they deal with our industries. You know, the reason why we are so dependent on other markets, you know, your China and whatever else, the reason why our textiles industry has actually almost collapsed, the reason why you find an Edcon and a Truworths, you know, that are close to business rescue, is precisely because South Africa has failed from a policy perspective to actually be protectionist. Now, we have actually made ourselves sort of wholly dependent on other economies. There isn't, you know, a supply chain process that we start and finish without any international intervention. And that is actually, you know, exposed us, you know, as a country. Dr. Mthombeni says we've got a lot of minerals in the country. But look at how we actually, you know, export these minerals without any beneficiation, you know, in the country. And that is done outside. And you look at it and you say, why? You know, is that not something that could be done internally so as to ensure that you strengthen the domestic market? So I think this probably, this for me, this crisis should actually make us look at things differently, you know, as both business, government, and actually all of us as the social partners, to say what is going to be the new normal after this? You know, what is the different lens that we're actually going to use to look at things? You know, how do we do business unusual? You know, if there's anything that is going to come out of this, I hope that we never go back to where we were. I hope that the agency, you know, and the decisiveness with which we have approached the COVID-19 crisis continues. Because if we think that things after this are going to be better, then we've got another thing coming. Things are actually going to be worse. And they are going to need double the efforts that we're putting in to ensure that we start turning the economic trajectory and we actually don't sit where a lot of economists are predicting. They are predicting that after this, we're going to be sitting at north of 50% unemployment. Can you imagine the social ills that are actually going to come out of South Africa sitting more than 50% unemployment? We're going to be sitting at debt to GDP ratio of about 80%. How do we deal with that? So I'm hoping that this therefore presents us that opportunity to start engaging with things from a totally different perspective.
It's gone 16 minutes before the hour, 11 o'clock. The lines are full. Please don't greet us. We are all fine. All my three guests are super. When I take you, just go straight to comment or question. Let's start with Kofi, Africa analyst. Welcome.
Yes, Murillo, this is a brilliant program you've got. I wish you can even spend your whole 3 hours on it. First of all, I want to commend all the three speakers, but most importantly, the enthusiasm of this lady who does a brilliant diagnostic of the situation. But her solution, to agree with the professor from Gibbs, I would disagree with it. We don't need to go to the IMF. We cannot, South Africa cannot afford to outsource its really power and the future of these people to the IMF. They're struggling themselves. They don't even know what to do about those countries and how to take them. So hence, I come down to support Chris Malikani. Chris is on the point. And the reason is, first of all, as a young man, I worked for the World Bank for almost 10 years. I know how they work over there. And they really don't have enough interest for most of us. And in fact, it's true that if you went to borrow money, even from the Chinese or anybody else, it might be the same. But I think that our finance minister, Tito, need to look into a much broader basket of borrowing. I wouldn't really pick the IMF. And if we do pick the IMF, it needs to be debated seriously. We can't afford it. The focus is on having the leadership of South Africa sitting down, being accountable for what they haven't done. Look at the diagnosis. I mean, we don't probably need to go and diagnose again because we know the problem. We need to find the right recipe. The sense of urgency that this lady is talking about is what all of us are looking for. And execution, the speed of execution is going to be the most important thing we have. We can't sit down and dilly-dally anymore. That's okay. My point.
Thank
and
you very much.
And kudos to Chris Malikani.
All right. Kofi Kwakwo is an Africa analyst. Let's go to our next caller. Thabang Redeport, your question, comment.
No thanks, Murillo. Look, Murillo, we've said it time and again, where you have a government that sees nothing wrong in pumping $18 billion of social grants monthly and allows a situation where there's a leakage, there's money destruction, you have foreigners set up everywhere, taking that money out. We would have expected, as the Minister of Small Business had earlier said, even if you open spaza shops, allow the money to circulate in the economy. You allow people who sleep in spaza shops, who do not adhere to any hygienic standards, to go back there in the midst of a very dangerous virus. So if we are to turn the situation around, I agree with the lady, you need to protect South Africans. You need to put South Africans first.
Okay. Thabang, you got it there, and I think it's one of the concerns raised in one of the Sunday papers today, Professor Malikani. I think it's from NAFCOG as well, saying that they've done, of course, I think that's a well-known fact that the majority of spaza shops throughout the country, they're not owned by South Africans. And if this relief fund has to go to spaza shops, it's not going to benefit South Africans. So the concerns raised by Thabang, post-COVID, what are these drastic issues which needs to be done? Because when people are dealing with spaza shops, then the issue of xenophobia comes in and all those kind of things. But it is a fact that you go everywhere in South Africa, spaza shops are owned by Pakistanis, Somalians, no South Africans. Yeah,
I think the country has been too lax when it comes to enforcement of bylaws and actually making sure that the labor market in South Africa is structured in a particular way. What we need in South Africa is gas and critical skills. But I think that the main labor market opened up in South Africa has led to a situation where a large chunk of South Africans basically were taken out or were basically outmaneuvered out of economic activities. And hence, now, when there's an announcement that there's going to be an intervention to, that is directed at supporting SMMEs, you'll have a problem because many of these SMMEs are registered. And you might find that many of the people who run these businesses are themselves not legally in South Africa, you know. So therefore, the impact of the intervention is not going to have the intended effectiveness, you know. Okay. Right. So this should basically call upon the, should allow us to say local government must begin to enforce bylaws and allow and make sure that that sector is much more formalized so that we can, in terms of crisis, respond in an effective way.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Kay in Beria. Your question, comment, Kay?
My comment, Murillo, is that going to the IMF is not the solution, my friend. That is going to cause much hardships. Remember those guys, when they borrow you money, they come with a program called structural economic adjustment, meaning that the government must reduce the number of workers. We saw that in the 90s, Murillo, the Asian countries, and including some of the African countries, they went to borrow there. What was the end result? They suffered.
Yeah.
So going I got to you, the Kay. IMF is not yeah. the solution. Thank
I,
you.
I got you there, Kay. Let's go to Tsepo. Comment question. Tsepo from Pretoria.
Yeah, Murillo, first I need to disagree with one of your guys there in the studio, who says that the problem of South Africa started long ago, 25 years ago. I disagree there because we know that when Mbeki left government, he had managed to pay a lot of our debt that we actually owed IMF and this World Banks of the of this world. And we had reserves, a lot of reserves already. And when we moved into era of Jacob Zuma, so we back into where we were before 94 because of Zuma. That's a fact. This was widely reported in the media. I'm not an economist, but I know that was a fact. So okay. Zuma messed up the whole thing. Question, actually, what I needed to raise is the government's priorities must now be revised, Murillo. Government do not really embrace a new innovation. And without new innovations, we can't produce any form of any new product or any new. Because right now, if you've got a new innovation, and I'm not talking spaza shops type of business. I'm talking something big where you can produce in a mass production and pre-sell this thing. They take you and send you to Innovation Hub, the Innovation Technology Innovation Agency. And when you get there, those guys, they take your product or what you try to develop and give it to students. You know, to students in the form of a technology station.
Yeah.
They're not serious about innovation, and they talk as if they're serious, but they're not serious. And there are so many people who are billionaires today for selling, for hiring, renting out the property to government. Can you imagine? Yeah. Government don't mind to pay 10 billion rand to one man who's got a property to house a department. It's not a problem to do that. But if you bring a new technology, want to revolutionize a particular sector with a new design. They struggle to get funds to develop your product.
Okay, I got you, my brother. Thank you very much. Because of the lines are chock-a-block, but I just want us to reflect. Okay, we spoke about the International Monetary Fund, but I think what Tsepo is raising as well, I mean, the president has the advisory panel on the fourth industrial revolution. What are the things going forward? You see, Chris, you were part of the planning commissioners, and you know when the National Development Plan was developed, even the commissioners admitted that one of the biggest problems since we were coming to South Africa is the fact that we are good in designing plans and strategies, but coming to implementation and execution, it's a massive problem. But I just want us to touch very briefly on this particular one, starting with you, Dr. Mthombeni. The budget has been tabled so far. There are calls in some quarters to say we cannot continue with the budget that has been previously tabled. Is there a reason for Finance Minister to readjust the budget post-COVID-19?
Absolutely. It's a very short answer. The world as we know it has changed, and therefore we all have to readjust our budget. I'm sure that government is, as we speak, in the process of reviewing its budget, realigning its objectives, and as a consequence, this is that it will have to be adjusted. I do want to emphasize, however, that for me, we need to recognize that we need to move into what I'd call a solidarity phase as a country. And in this solidarity phase, we all are going to experience pain. We all are going to have to pay to save our country. And therefore, it's not just budget to be there. It's a budget at an organizational level, a budget at a family level. We cannot come out of our lockdown back and behaving the way we did before the lockdown. We all need to come out of this lockdown with a different kind of mindset, a mindset of saying, what am I going to do? What contribution am I going to make for my brothers and sisters to make sure that as a country, we save the future of this country? Because if we don't do that, if we don't readjust all our budgets, it is all lost for all of us.
Okay, it's gone 6 minutes before the hour 11. Dr. Mthombeni, I'm going to request you just to stand still a little bit. We keep on losing you. The cell phone is cracking up a bit, but I'm going to go to the calls. You're doing so well, guys. We are fine. Just hit to the point, and we'll have Busisiwe Mavuso to comment as well on the issue of lack of implementation and execution. Let's go to Memurungwa Fosiloras. Memurungwa, your comment question.
Mario, a very easy one. The mask, Horuka the mask. You know, we don't have to talk about technology. Mario, in each and every area, we had bom meba rukan the uniform. And bom meba now, because the color di budwe, need ya rukan the uniform itiohil. Is it not better to say that these mothers must look at bachenche tsela and then use michini abone to sew the mask? Because definitely we are going to run short carry masks. So, and even not give them for free. They can send them, sell them for 2 rand, 5 rand. So I'm saying, technology before young this thing. So I'm saying in each and every township, there are mothers who have machines. Let's start carry masks.
Okay, Memurungwa. Practical solution there, the basics. Let's go to Sean in Greenstone. Sean?
Good morning, everyone. Great show as always. Just on the solidarity point, I think it's a great idea. Let's start with the CEOs halving their salaries, and I think that would be a great kind of message to send to South Africa, and I think it could work if we did that. What I wanted to say was, this whole experience has been a huge acid test for governments. The same two governments that are always praised for being the most efficient, well-run, waste the least money, Korea and Germany, have shown themselves to be perfect. You know, in Germany and Korea, you cannot sleep in parliament. If you sleep in parliament, that's the end of your career. And I think this has just kind of been, like they say, when the chickens come home to roost. This is what happens when our parliamentarians sleep all day and do nothing in parliament. When crisis is hit, we fall apart. But like I say, just go and learn about Korea and Germany, how they've handled these this pandemic and the low numbers of deaths they're experiencing. It is honestly phenomenal, and we should all be copying them moving forward, just as how society should run, I think.
Sean, thank you very much. The most important question that you just brushed a little bit easy, I'm going to take it to Busisiwe Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa. We are living in one of the most unequal society. This is a fact. It's in the United Nations report. Gini coefficient tells us that. And Sean is saying, in a principle of business unusual, which is where CEOs in this country, and I know the unions have complained, CEOs in this country are just earning extraordinarily filthy amount of money. So Sean is saying, can we reconsider the salaries of the CEOs compared to what the blue-collar workers are earning?
Mario, we are not going to have a choice. You know, if we're talking about short time for employees, which is a reduction of the number of hours that they work, if we are going to be talking about maybe adjusting the pay scale of our employees in order to be able to retain everyone into employment, business leaders in particular in this country are going to have to lead from the front. There's going to have to be, if we want to talk about salary adjustment, can we adjust from the top? Because I think let's agree, whatever adjustments you do at the bottom, they are not actually going to probably maybe give you that much net impact, you know, if you don't adjust at the top. So this puts us in a very real test as business leaders to say, what is it that we're actually going to give, you know, from a salary adjustment perspective? Because this that we're sitting with cannot be right. I think you're hearing in Italy where they are saying that, you know, there's been an Arab Spring, there's been a revolution, you know, for people on the ground who are actually now not even observing this lockdown issue because they are being driven out of their homes by hunger. So I don't know how long we as business thought that the people of Alexander were actually going to continue to look out of the the windows of their shacks, you know, at this opulence of Sentin. That's why I was saying that we have actually failed to effect transformation as business. If we have done what we're supposed to do, if we have actually addressed the equality, if the numbers by the CE report that come out year after year, you know, if those would have moved, it's actually, you know, criminal. 25 years into democracy for South Africa to be sitting at only 14% black executive leadership, you know, in corporate South Africa. It therefore says that we haven't actually engaged with this transformation the way we're supposed to engage with, we engage in. So if we fail again, you know, this time around to actually ensure that we lead from the front, then unfortunately we're going to have this Arab Spring, you know, happening here in the country, and we're going to have this revolution, you know, brought into the heart of business, into Sentin. Yeah. So I absolutely agree with that. It has been a subject that we have started discussing at BUSA to say that we are not going to come out of this lockdown unscathed as business. What is it that we're actually going to give as business leadership, you know, to try and lead from the front? And the issue of salary adjustments has been spoken to. It's actually at its very developmental stages. So I can't even comment to say the shape and form of it in terms of how it's going.
Professor Chris Maligane, Associate Professor of Economics at VETS, Dr. Maurice Mthombeni, from the Gordon Institute of Business Science, as well as the CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, Busisiwe Mavuso. We're just concluding our discussion with my very special guest, Professor Chris Maligane, Associate Professor of Economics at VETS, Dr. Maurice Mthombeni from the Gordon Institute of Business Science, as well as Busisiwe Mavuso, CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, taking the remaining calls so that we can conclude this interesting topic. It's not going to be a once-off, quite obviously, because a lot of things are changing in the business world. So from time to time, we'll also reflect on what is happening globally. We see interventions by central banks, you know, across the country. We haven't even touched, you know, on the issues of a stimulus package to, you know, from a South African perspective, to combat this COVID-19. So there's still a lot of issues that we need to tackle. But I think we are focusing on the immediate issues. Let's now go to Sifudi in Randfontein. Sifudi, your comment,
no
question.
No talk, no Rio, no Sunday talk radio. Professor Maligane, I dig you, morning to other guests. A geopolitical, global, economic battle has ensued that post-COVID-19, who will emerge amongst all these nations that take the economy seriously with its nose in the front? Can we imagine Rio 60 billion that we waste annually? I agree with Professor Maligane if we use those billions effectively. And China will emerge stronger because it has industrialized, it has invested in its human resource. And the sin of our country, I agree with Professor Maligane, the seed was planted as far as 1996. Morning to you guys.
Morning to you, Tate Sifudi. Let's go to Thabiso in Hammarskraal. Thabiso, question, comment?
Yeah, let me just start by saying I really want to say I am one of the people who became so happy when Moody downgraded us, because it has actually stopped the looting that is happening through the politicians of this country. Murillo, let me say this to your guest. Now my observation, I've seen where we don't have, South Africa doesn't have leadership that really loves this country. If we have a president that can be the one who actually promote illicit money flow, if I can tell you, before the president became the president, there was money that was allegedly coming from, was supposed to come to South Africa for MTN shares. that was coming, was supposed to come to South Africa. That money was taken to Mauritius, Madagascar, back to Nigeria and the like. It was just going abroad, all over these countries, but not coming to South Africa to benefit South Africa, as it was money that was invested through MTN in Nigeria. So to me, such things, if we South Africans knew what is happening, we couldn't have allowed this president to be the president. Because to me, this is one of the things that is making South Africa to suffer, the economy of this country to suffer like this. We don't believe in promoting or stopping the things that are actually making this country to lose, to destroy its own economy. I can give you an example. We have actually allowed a tester that is coming from China to take over and destroy the textile productiveness that we used to have in this country during the time of apartheid. The steel is destroyed. Why destroy such powerful industrial sectors that are actually benefiting the economy of this country?
Tabiso.
The politicians are the problem of this country. We can talk economy. I can tell you a very thing that through this corona I see. The spaza shop are taken over by the Somalis. Who allowed that? The politicians. Okay. Why? Wasn't there tax shops before when the apartheid was there? Tax shops were there. Were run by South Africans. But right now we are told that South Africans cannot run tax shops. Why? What happens? Because politicians have come in and they've seen that South Africans, the economy of this country must benefit them, not South Africans. Okay. This is the problem. The problem is politicians. If we should remove the ANC, what I became aware of is that we should remove the ANC. The ANC is not doing, it will never, never benefit and help South Africa. Okay. We have done good to stop the looting.
Okay, Tabiso, you got it off your chest, man. You know, I said it in the first hour of the show that reading Attuned Leadership by Dr. Riel Khoza, and you start asking yourself, when you talk about humaneness, when you talk about ethical leadership, and you look at the quality of leaders that we have, and that's across the board, because some of us decided to stay out of politics simply as much as we were activists within our respective communities. But when this element of makomtsotsi crept in, you know, there was something Tlhekatane called komtsotsi. That thing many years ago during apartheid. So basically who were using the political environment to advance their nefarious ways. It infiltrated many political parties. So we are reaping that, because even now there are people who are joining political parties with good missions, but they know intentions are very wrong. So let's go to Owen in Bretts. And ladies and gentlemen, at the end, I'll be giving you an opportunity to wrap anything that has been raised by the callers. Feel free to do that. I've got about two last callers to take. Owen Bretts, your question, comment?
In the first place, before the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, there was this narrative that was all over the place, that was prevalent, that we almost hear that South Africa was ready. So now that we are in the pandemic, are we ready? And were we ready? The readiness, was it all about the medical facility or the economical side of things? That's one. The other thing, I'm worried about the three prominent business people who are now stepping up to the plate. I'm talking about the Naspers, the Rupert, and the Mosipes. It took a COVID-19 pandemic for them to step up to the plate. In the past, we had some recession. We were before the COVID-19, we were on a technical recession. But they were not there to aid South Africans.
Okay, Owen from Bretts, let's take our last caller, Billy Rustenberg.
You know, the reality of the matter is that the ANC has refused to govern on behalf of the poor and black people in general. It's governing in the interest of minority white people and capital. That is why today, when there is a crisis like this, all of a sudden they go and purchase water tanks, 41,000. Why have they not been doing it? If there was no coronavirus, people will not be having water. There will not be a crisis of water. You know, it's very unfair of what is happening to black people in this country. Black people never got reparation. And that is the biggest problem. I don't know why government is borrowing money. Why are they borrowing money internationally? Because we don't see any construction sites in South Africa where government is running huge projects.
Okay, Billy. Those are million-dollar questions. Professor Chris Madikane, starting with you, your comments, reaction to some of the issues raised by callers as we conclude.
I think that the starting point is to realize that there's broadly an agreement that the country needs a leadership. There's a crisis of leadership. But we need a particular type of leadership. And I've repeatedly argued that South Africa does not have a properly ideologically oriented leadership. A leadership that has got a certain high degree of national consciousness that you will find in other countries, a nationalist consciousness. One of my panelists, Ms. Mavuso, said that we need to be protectionist. We don't have that type of leadership. Had we had that type of leadership that was connected to the industrial capital of the country, then this country would be in a far better position to deal with the shocks that we experience. And this is not the first shock, by the way, this COVID-19. We had the global financial crisis shocking us. We lost 1 million jobs in 1 year. That exposed the weaknesses of the South African economy. Despite that, nothing was done to industrialize the country. So as a way forward, whatever proposals we put forward should immediately react to the crisis, but lay the foundation for a longer-term social and economic transformation program that is going to uplift the majority of South Africans.
Dr. Morris Mthombeni, your reflections on the way forward.
Thank you very much, Maria. So at Gibbs, we are a school of leadership and a school of general management. So allow me to reflect from that perspective. And I know you've been trying to bring in the work of Dr. Ruel Koza who wrote on attuned leadership. So allow me to quote a bit in conclusion and say, he says, attuned leadership is that the ideal of an ethical, wholesome form of leadership based on the recognition of our common humanness, combines compassion, vision, moral duty, and good governance, seeking to encompass even those who may not be regarded as followers. It instills trust, enables the leader to break new ground and pioneer major change. It is about innovation. It is about inclusivity. So in my view, I recognize that the citizens are angry, the citizens are frustrated, and the citizens are looking for leadership. So I appeal to business leaders to realize that solidarity in this instance is self-interest. That if they don't act in a solidarity manner, they will be defeating their own interests. And I'm inviting business leaders to be agents of hope. Thank you.
Ms. Busiso Mavuso, Baro Mujamurahu ke Khosi ka Setswana.
Thank you, Morio. So the stats that have actually been spewed out are actually very shocking. So the formal sector jobs that are going to be lost as a direct result of this lockdown and this crisis are about 2.1 million. We are going to see a real GDP contraction of about 21%. The fiscal deficit that we're going to be sitting with at the end of this is probably going to be about 20% versus the 6.8% that we were at. So if you look at all of this, let's agree, the IMF or no IMF, South Africa is going to have to take pain. So if we are saying we can't go to the IMF because of the pain that is going to come with the IMF, then we are fooling ourselves to think that if we don't go to the IMF, if we do go to the either way, we are going to have to take pain. You can't steal so much money out of the country and think that it's going to be business as usual. It can't be. So I think let's just brace ourselves for that. You can't solve South Africa's problems and still think that you're going to be loved by everyone, and that is from a government perspective. So the pain that we've actually been delaying for the past 3 years, we are now going to have to implement it. And I think we're going to have to send that message so that all of us, you know, as a country, everyone is not under no illusion in terms of what is going to come post-COVID-19. Sifudi raises that. He says that what is going to happen after post-COVID-19? The international research says that at least the research that has been done internationally, it takes about 6 to 12 quarters to recover after a pandemic, any pandemic. So if that is how long it's going to take us just to recover from the COVID-19 crisis, we still have, you know, our ratings downgrade shock to recover from and everything else that is wrong in this country. So I think let's just brace ourselves with that, you know, view going forward. Hence, I was saying that, you know, the urgency that we're seeing at the moment is going to have to be the new normal. If we think that after this, we're going to go back to business as usual, then we've got another thing coming. Unfortunately, if that is going to be the case, then we are going to very soon talk about South Africa having a collapsed economy if we are not going to have decisive leadership and if we are not going to brace ourselves for the difficulty that is going to come in this country after this entire crisis has passed. Thank you.
I thank you all for your insights. My closing remarks on this topic is that we have a special tribunal being set up by the president specifically to collect money that has been stolen from the fiscus. Because there are thousands, the hundreds, actually, of cases under the SIU. That special tribunal have had the first case ever since established. They must move with speed and recover that money. Yeah. And the Zondo Commission, it has been declared that we don't have to wait for the for the Zondo Commission to conclude. But the Hawks and the National Prosecuting Authority can work on some of the cases that are coming out of the Zondo Commission. On that note, I thank you all for your insights. Much appreciated.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.